Welcome everyone. Wonderful to get together here. Thought I'd read to you something that I wrote this morning. Oh, the places you will go. In the current survey of spiritual literature, there's a spectrum of attitudes about God, the ultimate reality, and this world we live in. There are examples of those who give up everything in this world, even a loincloth, in order to overcome the limiting pull of worldly attraction, in order to know God. Then there are others who seem to be book and retreat producers, who are apparently making millions on writing and talking about spiritual living. What are we to believe about realizing God and our relationship to this world? In our Kriya lineage, we read the most interesting account of Babaji manifesting a palace for Larhi Mahashaya in order to satisfy a latent desire to see such a thing. And from Swami Ramdas, we read that the world is God. And yet we know that attachment to this world is a major stumbling block on the road to realization. We must make a careful analysis to perceive the truth of the matter. This is especially true given how deceptive this ego mind is. On our journey to realization, we know that things of the world definitely bring the mind down from the inner states of peace and bliss. This battle between the upward forces and the downward forces is tremendous. But not everything is a temptation. What will be a great attraction for someone else may have no appeal to me. Therefore, the object of attraction is not the problem. It is the attachment the mind forms for a person, place, or thing. A good rule of thumb is that when you feel the pull of strong attraction, you avoid it. Instead, you place your mind firmly upon God until the fever of attraction has completely passed. Even then, you are careful of provoking attraction by being too familiar with the attachment, for slumbering embers can awaken too easily into burning passion. In these past years, God has taken me through many experiences in my relationship to this world. He gradually took away everything from me in a worldly sense. Finally, He took job and profession away. And when I spent a year in silence and seclusion, He took away all but a few items of furniture, my meditation chair, a table, and a mat for a bed. After having done this, He seemed intent on bringing me back into this world. Marriage that came with a dowry of a Ford Escort car, and a few more items of furniture. Then it was His good graces that we lived with others from place to place, then rented a house, then bought a house, more cars came our way, then just this last year, another house. Now He has brought us to California, where we are staying in my brother's beautiful motorhome for 3 weeks in a magnificent RV park in Desert Palm. As we sit surrounded by motorhomes, some of them costing over $1 million, the question comes, what is my relationship with all of this? Ever since my year in silence, I have been established in an immovable stillness within. Somehow, whatever comes does not touch this stillness that directly connects with the supreme reality. These gifts of material things are His play, His leela. If once I noticed the inner stillness disturbed by these outer happenings, I would instantly run away. Even with this inner attachment, I feel that I should be a good steward of what has been given. Cars and house should be kept in good working order. Uplifting beauty can be created, and an open hand is kept for the giving of what has been given, as it all will be given someday, as God directs. This logic-defying play unfolds before my astounded being. I say logic-defying because, with having renounced all, so much has come. It is truly logic-defying. However, what is clear to me is that happiness begins within. And if everything suddenly was gone, and all I had was God, in Him I know I have everything. Perhaps those authors who have millions also have God. All things are possible to Him. My favorite Dr. Seuss book, in truth the only one I have read, is Oh, the Places You Will Go. In the story, our intrepid traveler, you, goes through all the ups and terrifying downs, but ever proceeds on his or her way. This life takes on so many adventures, and every one of them has great meaning in your ultimate adventure of going to God. Find that place of stillness within your heart and soul, and never let go of it. Then be in wonder as God unfolds his life within you and all around you. And then be in wonder as all the places you will go. And I came across this saying of Ramakrishna and the Gospel of Ramakrishna. In the light of Vedantic reasoning, the world is illusory, unreal as a dream. The Supreme Soul is the witness of the three states of waking, dream, and deep sleep, of waking, dream, and deep sleep. These things are in line with your thought. The waking state is only as real as the dream. Let me tell you a story that agrees with your attitude. He's speaking here to a particular individual who's a jnani. And the jnanis in India are those who have had wisdom awakened inside of them. And they feel that this world is but a dream, and that the interior reality that they are experiencing is the true reality. Papa talks about it in this way. In the beginning, as an aspirant, you became a bhakta. That is, you develop a strong attraction and love for the supreme reality, that is God. And as you develop this strong attraction to God, the world falls away. And eventually you enter into the state of a jnana. And the jnana, or jnani, is one who sees this world as a delusion or an illusion, and that this inner supreme reality has been fully awakened in them. Papa takes it one step further, and he says, beyond that is the para-bhakti. Para means highest, supreme, as Paramahansa means the supreme swan. The para-bhakti rises above the state of the bhakta, who is in a state of subject and object. He still feels that he is loving something that is outside of himself. The jnana realizes that the true self has been awakened inside of him. The para-bhakti then sees that the world is God. It is a manifestation of the same spirit that he finds dwelling deep within himself. And so this is the third and the highest stage. So here, Ramakrishna is talking to one who ascribes to the state of consciousness of jnana, who sees this world as an illusion. And he goes on to tell this story. There was a farmer who lived in the countryside. He was a real jnani, earned his living by farming. He was married, and after many years, a son was born to him, whom he named Haru. The parents loved the boy dearly. This was natural, since he was the one precious gem in the family. On account of his religious nature, the farmer was loved by the villagers. One day he was working in the field when a neighbor came and told him that Haru had an attack of cholera. The farmer at once returned home and arranged for treatment for the boy. But Haru died. The other members of the family were grief-stricken, but the farmer acted as if nothing had happened. He consoled his family and told them that grieving was futile. Then he went back to the field. On returning home, he found his wife weeping even more bitterly. She said to him, "How heartless you are! You haven't shed one tear for the child." The farmer replied quietly, "Shall I tell you why I haven't wept? I had a very vivid dream last night. I dreamt I had become a king. I was the father of 8 sons and was very happy with them. Then I woke up. Now I am greatly perplexed. Should I weep for those 8 sons or for this one, Haru?" The farmer was a jnani. Therefore, he realized that the waking state is as unreal as the dream state. There is only one eternal substance, and that is the Atman. Ramakrishna continuing, but for my part, I accept everything. Turiya is also, and also the three waking states, dream and deep sleep. I accept all three states. I accept all, Brahman and also Maya, the universe and its living beings. If I accepted less, I should not get the full weight. A devotee, the full weight? How is that? Everyone laughs. Master, Brahman is qualified by the universe and its living beings. At the beginning, while following the method of not this of the Yani, one has to eliminate the universe and its living beings. But as long as I consciousness remains, one cannot but feel that it is God Himself who has become everything. He alone has become the 24 cosmic principles. When a man speaks of the essential part of the bell fruit, he means its flesh only, not the seeds and the shell. But if he wants to speak of the total weight of the fruit, it will not do for him to weigh only the flesh. He must accept the whole thing, seeds and shell and flesh. Seeds and shell and flesh belong to one and the same fruit. The nitya, or that which is beyond creation, and the lila, that is creation, belong to the same reality. Therefore, I accept everything, the relative as well as the absolute. I don't explain the way away the world as Maya. Were I to do so, I might get short weight. Mahacharan, that's what the fellow he's been speaking to. It is a good synthesis from the absolute to the relative and from the relative to the absolute, Ramakrishna. Dhyanis regard everything as an illusory, like a dream, but the bhaktas accept all the states. The milk flows only in driblets for dhyani. There are some cows that pick and choose their fodder, hence their milk flows only in dribbles. But cows that don't discriminate so much and eat whatever they get, give milk in torrents. A superior devotee of God accepts both the absolute and the relative. Therefore, he is able to enjoy the divine, even in his mind, comes down from the absolute. Such a devotee is like the cows that give milk in torrents. This cracks everybody up. Mahima, but the milk of the cow that eats without discrimination smells a little. The master with a smile, that's true, no doubt. Therefore, that milk should be boiled. One should boil such milk over the fire a little while. There will be no smell whatever if you boil the milk over the fire of knowledge. What's fascinating here is that these things are argued over in India fairly constantly. And this is such high-minded talk. None of these people are highly educated in that sense. Ramakrishna never attended any school beyond the most elementary grades. And many of the people who came to see him, and yet we hear them discussing this very high philosophy, using ordinary stories, much as Jesus did, in order to illustrate the points that they're making. We know that when we are ascending, and we are trying to meditate, the first thing that happens is everything intrudes into our mind. What's been going on? What's going to happen later in the day? Everything comes into the mind except being present to this very moment, entering into that deepest of stillness. And so we know the battle that takes place as the upward ascending forces are opposed by these downward pulling forces. And so in this sense, we can say this world is the obstacle. But as I wrote this morning, it is not the world itself. It is wrong to ascribe the negativity to this world. It is our attraction, it is our attachment to this world that makes us have the mind come down into a lower state of consciousness. We might ask, is it possible to live in the world but not of the world. And what we would have to say is that it absolutely is. It may be rare. We have occasions and many instances in these times of souls that have had true inward experiences. But as they have gone out into the world and perhaps they have taught, perhaps they have entered into this world in various ways, they get ensnared by this world, whether it is, as Ramakrishna would say, women and gold, or he would say to the women, men and gold, or some other attraction takes over, and it pulls the mind back down. We must remain ever vigilant in that sense. Even Papa Ram Dass, and perhaps he did it only for the example of those who sat around, but he would never look at a woman in the eyes. He's always very careful in that way. Ramakrishna posed a test for himself one time, and he took a rupee note in one hand and a clod of earth in the other hand, and he went down to the Ganges, and he threw them both in at the same time to see whether he noticed any difference of attraction inside of himself or attachment. Was one equal to the other? He gained a great sensitivity to money, and money was very painful for him to handle as it came to be. And Vivekananda, when he first came as Narada to Ramakrishna, was very mischievous. And he had heard that the master was in pain if he ever touched money, so he thought he would test this. And he went and he put some money under the bed of Ramakrishna's, under the mattress there. And Ramakrishna went to sit down. He didn't know that the money was there. But as soon as he sat down, he experienced great pain, and he jumped up like he'd been stung by a bee. And he pointed at Narendra, Swami Vivekananda, and he said, "You're responsible for this." And Vivekananda felt very bad about it then, but it proved to him that this condition was real for Ramakrishna. Other saints handle money. Other saints gain great possessions. I marveled at Swami Satchidananda and his running of the ashram, of Ananda Ashram in South India. And under his guidance, they built new buildings. They built a hospital, four stories high, very large structure. They did all of these things. And so the ashram grew under him. And when he had the anniversary for his 50th year of having taken sannyas, so many people brought him gifts of various kinds. And I said, "Swamiji, isn't it an irony that in celebration of your total renouncing of this world, everybody's bringing you things?" And with him, it was in one hand and out the other. And he clearly didn't have any attraction for any of it. And yet he lived in the midst of all of this. There is a young boy there, and he watched the comings and goings of Swamiji all the time. And different cars, people would come and pick him up. They always put an orange cloth in the seat of the car before Swamiji got in there. And so this little boy, I don't know, he is 6 or 7 years old. And he said, "When I grow up, I want to be a Swami." And so somebody asked him, "Why?" And he says, "Because you get so many cars." His eyes just saw him coming and going in all these different cars all the time. And so he's surrounded by all of these activities. Papa Ram Dass left the world and wandered for 4 years without taking any money with him, just having one extra piece of cloth, didn't take any food with him, would store nothing, absolutely. And during all that time of wandering, God took care of him at every step. And then eventually an ashram began to form around him. And then these buildings, and then one thing after another. One night he was watching a shed or a building burn down, and it had the printing press in it. And he was dancing with joy because he was so enjoying the fire. But somebody said, "But Papa, that's the printing press, and that's our building, and what will we do?" And Papa said, "Never mind, Ram will take care of it. God will take care of it." And so less than a month later, the building was replaced, the printing press was replaced, everything was going on better than ever. And so this was his faith. This was always his assumption that if this work was to grow, if this work was to be held, then it would always be supplied for. And even today, with the Nanda Ashram, by the end of the year, I think it's the end of March is their calendar year. But by the end of the year, they have spent all the money that has been given to them all through the year, and they start off brand new. And the assumption is that if God is going to want it to survive, it will, and nobody can stop it. If he doesn't want it to survive, then there's nothing anybody can do to keep it. And so they live in perfect and total trust that way. Once Papa was approached and he was asked by some businessmen, and they said, why don't we set up a foundation? He said, you're living hand to mouth all the time. Set up a foundation, people will begin to give money to it, it'll be a tax deduction, and then you'll grow a large fund, and then you'll be able to live off the fund, and you won't have this up and down all the time. And many times they were in debt. And Papa said, yes, you may do that. Then you can load up all of Ram Dass's books, put them into a dump truck, and dump them into the sea. So, in other words, no, it wasn't his principle. It wasn't how he was going to operate. Now, living in the world as householders, it doesn't mean that we can't keep a savings account or that we can't keep some money and be wise, a wise steward with the money that we are given. But can we inwardly, honestly say that our reliance is upon God and not upon the bank account or not upon the job that we have? Can we really come to that place where inwardly we are so divorced from attachment to this world that we feel this inner freedom, and it is great freedom when we feel that anything can come, anything can go, and I will be all right. Even this body can come or this body can go. And I, the true I, is unaffected, unchanged. We come to that experience, perhaps, even as the Buddha in his moment of realization, where he remembered all of his lives, all of his incarnations. And more than that, he remembered who he was before he even incarnated. Krishna had this knowledge from the very beginning. And so this is a great depth, a great well of knowledge that is inside of all of us. Why do we not remember these things? But who here has even many memories of before they were 10 years old or 6 years old? Very fragment memories usually. Much less memories of being in the womb, memories going beyond being in the womb, who we were before we wore this face, this body, this form. You are so much more. And to become overly focused upon this body, upon this form, upon even this incarnation, is to deny the greater aspect within you. This is not just a philosophy that we can choose to accept. It is a reality that we can truly discover deep within ourselves. But in order to discover it, we have to take, to some extent, the attitude of dhyani. We have to divorce ourselves from those things that we're overly attached to. Because in the end, everything will be taken away from us. When we drop this body, we drop everything that we came into this have had in this world. There's a story of one man who was very, very determined. He was very attached to his gold. And so he's absolutely determined that they say you can't take it with you, but he was going to take it with him. And so with tremendous strength of will, when he died, he levitated this piece of gold up with him, this big brick of gold. And he took it with him to heaven, and finally he got to St. Peter's gates. And with everything in him, he was straining so hard to bring this piece of gold with him. St. Peter took one look at that brick of gold, and as they say in heaven, the streets are paved with gold. And he said, well, how thoughtful of you to bring a paving brick with you. and he picked it up and he threw it in with a big pile of other gold bricks that were to be used to pave the roads. That's how much it's worth. And so we can't take anything with us. In the end, we must realize this. And so why not now detach ourselves from it? It doesn't mean anything in your outward life has to change. But if you find that something has an inordinate value to you, that you cannot concentrate on God because you are worried about this or that or the other, that's what has to be surrendered. That's what has to be let go of. If you are to have that perfect state of peace and bliss now, while you're in this body, so many people do not realize that the kingdom of heaven is spread out all over this world and that it is deep within your own soul and spirit, that you can have that great realization even now. It is not far from you. There is nothing that says so. It is that we are blinded to the inner kingdom because we are overly preoccupied with this world. Practice every day, setting aside some time, and really separating yourself from the things of this world. Present before your mind that there is a vast kingdom of spirit that is waiting for your discovery, and that you are entering into that kingdom when you are entering into meditation. You are setting aside the things of this world. You enter into an ancient sacred temple. You hear the sound of Om. You see the light of divine consciousness shining within you. You feel the vibration, the uplifting vibration of peace and bliss that begin to take you up from the things of this world, from the things of this body. And it delivers you into an inner kingdom that is indescribable. And yet you can experience this. You can know this. It is yours to know. Now I say there is nothing that keeps you from that realization except for our own attachment. And when we let go of everything of time and space and deliver ourselves at the feet of the Supreme Reality, then we will know the truth of who and what we have always been. It is the truth. It has been attested by realized beings down through time. And it is possible for every person to go within and find that inner kingdom. And really, that is just the beginning. Just the beginning. So oftentimes we think gaining the state of realization is the end. But it's really the beginning of living life as it truly is. And then it is the infinite consciousness, great joy, to reveal to you kingdom after kingdom after kingdom, realm after realm in this heavenly consciousness. There is so much to experience that eternity is not long enough. If everything were to be known, everything were to be explored through your intuition of God consciousness. This is a tremendous promise, and it is true. So as we think about entering into deeper meditation, let us not just remain on the surface. If we are a pearl diver, we cannot get the pearls if we're just floating on the surface. We have to dive deep. And when we dive deep, then we might find those great pearls of wisdom, of God experience, of joy, of peace, of bliss. So wait no longer, and oh, the places you will go will be wonderful, fulfilling. It will fulfill all of your heart's desires. Now let us sit for a few minutes, diving deep into the ocean of our own consciousness, and feeling the peace, feeling the joy, feeling the uplifting currents flowing through our entire beings. we close with the chanting of three Aums. With each Aum, let us see a great peace, an uplifting force, roll all around this world, touching hearts and minds of individuals everywhere, bringing soothing calm, peace, light, and joy as it rolls all over this earth. Joy. Pranams, I bow to the light within you.